Hari Om and Jai Guru. A warm welcome to those who are listening in, and my profound thanks to the Gita Ashram for having invited me to give this commentary on chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita. I am Unnikrishnan Menon and have been a disciple of Swami Bhubananda Tirtha, or Pooja Swamiji as I fondly call him, since 1989. Pooja Swamiji is also the founder and guiding light of the Society for Inner Resources and Development, SIRD, Malaysia, of which I am a member. More than a month back, when Sarinda Kumari contacted me with a request to give a short commentary on Chapter 13, I did not reply immediately. As it has been our practice, I called Pooja Swamiji and received his blessings to give this commentary. He also gave me a few points to highlight in my delivery. So, I am here today. The two principal texts that I have used as reference to prepare this commentary are the translation of the Bhagavad Gita by the late Swami Tapasyananda, who headed the Sri Ramakrishna Math in Chennai, and my Pooja Swamiji's Essential Concepts in Bhagavad Gita, Volume 5. Before I delve into Chapter 13 proper, I would like to give an overview of the structure of the Bhagavad Gita as agreed upon by many scholars and commentators of this eternal and incomparable scripture of mankind. The Bhagavad Gita, which has 18 chapters, can be divided into three parts of six chapters each. The first six chapters dwell on karma or work and discuss the interactional relevance of spiritual pursuit and wisdom. From the 7th chapter to the 12th chapter, the focus is on devotion. Here, the need for recognizing the Supreme Reality as the one string passing through all objective manifestations, mighty as well as minute, is stressed. This understanding should become wholesome and unfold all thoughts, attitudes and aims. It is in the 12th chapter that a listing is made of the 35 qualities that characterize a true devotee. The last six chapters, beginning from chapter 13, take up the third and culminating phase of spiritual sadhana, which is that of pure knowledge or wisdom. It becomes a crowning finale to the earlier karma and bhakti. The 13th chapter, being the first of the last six chapters devoted to knowledge or wisdom, is titled Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga, or Differentiation of the Knower from the known. In the first six verses of this chapter, the differentiation between the field, Kshetra, and the knower of the field, Kshetrajna, is clearly spelt out. The body is the Kshetra, which means field. What does this imply? A field on earth is the ground for cultivating or growing plants. It is where we till the soil, make it loose, fertile, and ready for sowing or planting. It becomes a field for agricultural activities, which bring forth food and nourishment. In the same manner, this chapter declares that the seeker must regard his body as a field for spiritual cultivation, which can grow wisdom and nourishment that the seeker requires. However, this kshetra or body is totally inert or insentient. To activate and move this body, one requires the kshetrajna or knower of the body, which is sentient and is a source of knowledge. By dint of kshetrajna alone, one knows the body as well as the world around and thereby interacts with the world. Bodies are many, each being different from the other. Also, there is ample variety in the bodily level. But in the knower of the body, the kshetrajna, no such difference exists. The Bhagavad Gita declares that in all the kshetras, the kshetrajna is but one only. However much the seeker is involved with the world of bodies, he must always keep in mind that they come under the category of the knowable or kshetra, as opposed to the singular knower or kshetrajna. Then we turn to verses 7 to 11 of chapter 13, which highlight the fact that the kshetra and kshetrajna are inextricably mixed up in man in the state of ignorance. To know them in their distinctiveness is knowledge. This knowledge, which is the true spiritual wisdom, can only be acquired when man cultivates certain disciplines or spiritual virtues. These spiritual virtues have the effect of bringing about a unique expansion and elevation in the normal man's mind, intelligence, and ego, which alone will help to overcome the normal constrictions that he suffers from. The verses here list a set of 20 disciplines or spiritual virtues, such as absence of pride and vanity, non-injury, patience, perseverance, service of the teacher, self-control, frequenting solitude, steady pursuit of spiritual inquiry, etc. From an examination of even one of these spiritual values, it will become clear how they promote man's ability to distinguish between the kshetra and kshetrajna. Let us take the virtue of steady pursuit of spiritual inquiry. Any seeker who undertakes it will naturally participate in satsangs, read the time-honored scriptures, and seek out spiritual masters. Such activities will surely help him to understand the kshetra and kshetrajna, and thereby better grasp the distinction between them. In other words, his ignorance will be reduced and spiritual wisdom will dawn in him. In a similar vein, all the other 19 spiritual virtues will have the same elevating impact in him. Pooja Swamiji declares that the spiritual virtues listed here will promote characteral elegance, behavioral majesty, and interactional excellence in any seeker. Now we turn to verses 12 to 15. These verses identify that which is to be known as a supreme being. At the same time, the verses also declare that words like existent and non-existent are not able to describe the supreme being. The language of contradiction is used to explain the challenge of describing the Supreme Being. For example, he is said to be both far and near. Though unattached and unrelated, he supports everything. And though beyond the gunas of Prakriti or nature, he is the enjoyer of all the gunas. The verses go on to declare that the Supreme Being is the Lord of all and remains undivided in the apparently diversified phenomena. He is the ultimate consciousness that reveals everything, the source of all light and life, and the center to which all spiritual quest is directed. He verily resides in the heart of all. The concluding verses, that is 16 to 34, point to the two aspects in man. One is the perishable body-mind complex, and the other is a supreme being which is ever free and immortal. In his spiritual ignorance, man is not aware that he is a supreme being and identifies himself with the body-mind complex. It is this wrong identification that causes him to suffer. When man realizes his true identity as the supreme being, his suffering also ceases. This profound truth, which can release man from suffering, is best explained with the help of a Vedantic parable, which was very much liked by Swami Vivekananda. Many of you may already know this parable, but listening to it again is always illuminating. In a forest, there was a lion with three of her cubs. One day, one of the cubs went astray and got separated from her family. After a lot of walking, the cub came across a flock of sheep who readily accepted her. The cub became like one of the sheep and got accustomed to eating grass. After a few years, the cub grew and became a full-grown lion, but behaved very much like a sheep. One day, another lion was out hunting and attacked the flock of sheep. All the sheep ran helter-skelter, including the adopted lion. The passerby lion was astonished to see this adopted lion behaving just like one of the sheep. It chased him and confronted him. The adopted lion was terrified and pleaded to be released. On seeing this behavior, the passerby lion tried to explain to him that he need not run, as he was also another lion and can regain his position as the king of animals. The adopted lion was still terrified and could not be convinced. Then the passerby lion dragged the adopted lion to a nearby pond and asked him to see their reflections. Immediately, with this new knowledge and awareness, the adopted lion lost all his fears and started behaving as a lion once more. All of us are like the adopted lion. As long as we are in spiritual ignorance, which is we are unaware of our true identity as a supreme, ever free, immortal being, we will identify ourselves as a limited body-mind complex. Consequently, any input which adversely affects the body-mind complex will be owned by us and we will suffer accordingly. Let us take an example to illustrate this. When a negative emotion like fear arises in me, I say that I am fearful. By right, my mind has become fearful, and my true I or self is just a witness to the emotion of fear that has arisen. The fear emotion is superimposed on the true self and veils it. The only solution for this is to discover our true witness identity as exhorted by the Bhagavad Gita. In concluding my brief commentary of chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, I would like to summarize the key teachings of this chapter. Essentially, the chapter has four segments. The first segment, from verse 1 to 6, explains the concept of kshetra, field, and the kshetrajna, knower of the field. In the second segment, from verse 7 to 11, it is emphasized that knowing the distinction between kshetra and kshetrajna requires the seeker to imbibe and manifest a set of 20 virtues. The third segment, from verse 12 to 15, elaborates on the object to be known, which is the Supreme Being, and highlights the limitations of language in defining the Supreme Being. Finally, in the fourth segment, from verse 16 to 34, true knowledge is explained as the discovery of one's spiritual identity. The parable of the lost lion cub was utilized to drive home the central message of this chapter, as well as the Bhagavad Gita, that all of man's problems and suffering arise from not knowing his true identity. I hope whatever I have said has contributed to your understanding of chapter 13 in a small measure. It is very great of Gita Ashram to organize this annual program and also invite all other like-minded spiritual organizations to participate. On behalf of SIRD Malaysia, I wish to record our deep appreciation for the yeoman service being rendered by the Gita Ashram to spread the timeless and universal message of the Bhagavad Gita. Thank you.